Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the AllVR conference call and webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your telephone. You may also enter questions at any time throughout the webinar by using the chat feature located in the upper left-hand corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 14th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nate Arnold. Please go ahead.
Go, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. Sorry to keep you holding for a few minutes. We're running here from another meeting that went for a couple of hours. I'm still trying to get my full psyche redirected and focused back on this call. If you look at the agenda, there's only a couple of things on there, but I think we have a lot of information on both. So there'll be a whole bunch of stuff to fill in, starting out with the cost reimbursement update. In terms of the usual numbers that I try and give you, last month in March, we actually cleared over 2,100 claims. It's the largest number of clearances in the history of the cost reimbursement program. I can't hear the applause out there, but I'm sure that it must be deafening. And it resulted in about $18.6 million going out the door, which is obviously a huge month. That puts us for the fiscal year, for the federal fiscal year, at $70 million versus only about $53.4 last year, which was also, of course, as you know, a huge year. So for those of you that still have cases and are pending, I know it probably seems like you're waiting a while or it's not moving, but I think you can see from the numbers we're moving a lot of stuff out, and all the trend lines and the indicators are in the right direction. The new people that we hired last year really started to hit their stride and are starting to pay off all the dividends we knew they would. We've also recently received some overtime allocation, so denying people personal lives of any kind while they work cases basically 24/7 here. But with those numbers and with those things, I think we're now working December claims. So the usual guidance I give you, if you have cases that are October 14 or before that you have not received a decision on, get an inquiry into the VR help desk, and we will either locate it, ask you to resubmit it, or tell you what happened with it, and we'll resolve that discrepancy. A couple of brief reminder items from the VR team. We are going to be, you know, you've heard us talk at length on the last many calls talking about the new automated system that will be coming. One of the things that will be a key part of that system is the use of standardized codes for services that are provided. The codes that RSA uses, and they are required when we go into what we call ITOS, the system of the future. So we are going to be asking you to start using those codes now. The sooner the better. The sooner that we have that information here, if we have to migrate data into the new system, we'll have the right stuff there. If you don't start including them at some point, it may ultimately delay claims processing if we have to go back to either get a better description of the service or the code that should be applied. We will, sometime in the next week or so, hopefully get a blast out to you. If you don't have access to the codes and the listings, we're going to send a list out to everybody. Make sure that you've got it. And I encourage you to start using those as soon as you can. One other item I've received a number of questions about, and as you know, we've been doing a lot of refresher training here. When you hire new people, that's one of the things that goes on. And one of the items that came up as a result of that refresher training was kind of an increased awareness of the whole issue of when there's a big gap between VR closure and the onset of SGA level earnings. And if you look at your provider handbook, Section 3.6, I think it's number 2, talks about the fact where if there's less than a year between VR closure and the start of SGA, then it's presumed, of course, that what you folks did clearly helped the person go back to work, and there's no questions asked. If it's more than a year and there's no transitional work, in other words, if the person did not start working somewhat in that period, then we need an explanation of kind of how the services that were provided actually connected to the person's employment. So you may be receiving some C letters from us asking for additional information. I would encourage you, I know in a lot of cases you don't have a lot of that earnings information in between there, but if there's a sizable gap between VR closure and the start of what you know to be the SGA period, I would encourage you to include a narrative explanation of how the VR services connected the person to that employment. Because if you send the person to college and 5 years later they get a job working at Wendy's, it's not likely that those services are going to be considered to be connected. So if you have questions about that, again, contact us through the help desk or let me know, and we'll be glad to clarify that. But you may start seeing a lot of feedback on those kinds of cases. I wanted also, before I wrap up these updates, to, I guess, put a reminder out that next week is the CSAVR meeting. I assume that some of you will be there. I know there's a training that's going to go on Tuesday, and I look forward to seeing as many of you as are going to be there as possible. And one other thing, I have to mention there's been a change in the leadership of the VR operations team here. I have achieved what they would call, I guess, team leader emeritus status. I'm moving into a senior advisor position, and Danielle Armstrong, who has been a key part of our EN operations team for a number of years, and who I consider to be very proud of having helped to hire to bring over to that team, is on an acting basis going to be taking my place. So we are starting to migrate some of the responsibilities of running the team, and believe me, they are manifold. And I'm starting to impart a lot of the folklore and knowledge that goes with that. I'm not going to try and dump it on her all at once, because I know if that's the case, she'll probably go work somewhere else. We don't want to have that happen. But It's Danielle Armstrong. That means her email address is danielle.armstrong@ssa.gov. And you will be hearing from her. If you have questions and issues, I'm still going to be around. I'm going to be available. You can communicate things to me or to her, and gradually you will see that she's going to be more and more involved in this stuff. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over for the ticket portal follow-up to Michelle LeJure.
Thank you, Nate, and thank you, Nate, for all that you have done and will continue to do with the ticket program and cost reimbursement. We really do appreciate your sense of humor. It always livens up the conversation, so thank you for that. And Danielle Armstrong, welcome, and we look forward to working with you. And the next week will be a busy time, actually, for the ticket program and SSA. So thank you for joining us. As Nate said, this is Michelle LeJure, and I am the EN Development and Training Manager. And I just wanted to say thank you to the VR agencies that took the time to submit white papers to us on best practices, effective practices, and we've received quite a few entries, and we are in the process of reviewing them. Excellent work, if I must say. I'm just one of many who will be reviewing them on Partnership Plus activities, as well as including a renewed focus on using the work incentive benefit coordinators during and after Partnership Plus handoff. So, again, we want to thank each of you that took the time to submit a paper to us, and hopefully very soon we will be able to get responses back to you on when those presentations will be part of our next, believe it or not, round three of effective practice series webinars. So stay tuned for that. As the agenda says, we're going to share with you as a follow-up a synopsis, kind of a compilation of the questions that we received from you either by chat or phone that we didn't have time to share with you and get feedback for the March call. So this is a continuation of the discussion around the ticket portal. And I would like to welcome back Adele Barr from Program Integrity that worked with me during the last call. And Desiree Fitzgerald will be assisting us on a few questions as well. So let's get started with a few questions regarding the ticket portal. So Adele, we received questions, and we're going to summarize this. Walk us through what are the steps that a ticket coordinator or anyone else at the state VR agency would need to do to gain access to the ticket portal.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity, Michelle. As you mentioned, there's a few steps to gaining access to the portal. One, of course, is to complete the suitability paperwork. The other is to complete or acquire a MyFSA.gov account with extra security. Now, at the point that those two steps are completed, what you would want to do is contact your VR help desk, pardon me, and at that point, what they will request from you, trying to gain access to the portal, they'll ask for your Social Security number, they'll ask for your the Security Awareness Form, which is SSA Form 222, and the user ID from which you created that you received from the SSA.gov account. So I know I'm battling a cold, so maybe I sound congested or maybe it's all a little flurry. So make sure I complete all the steps again or repeat. Complete the suitability paperwork. Create MySSA.gov account with extra security.
And where do you find that extra security? Is it a letter? Is it on the website when you're going to MySSA.gov? Where do you hit the button for that information?
To create MySSA.gov account?
With the extra security. It's on the same page.
That same page when you started, you'll see that it asks you extra security. You just click on that.
Correct. In the website. So there's no letter that comes asking you if you want it or anything like that.
Oh, no. It should happen all right there while you're creating it.
Exactly. Oh, great. Okay. That's good to know.
And then at that point, you let the VR help desk know that you've completed those steps. Then they're going to ask a few things of you, the security awareness form, your Social Security number, and the user ID you obtained from MySSA.gov.
And should you send your Social Security number or your user PIN number by email to the VR help desk at SSA?
You should not. That would be considered PII.
Okay.
So the specialist will give you the steps on how to get that information. More than likely, it will be a phone call.
Great, thank you. So let's move on. We received a couple of questions regarding the ticket portal, and now that Cuber is not available, how are we to get information on wages and wage information?
Well, Michelle, we don't expect that quarterly information will be unavailable for that long. The information we'll be providing will not be in the same form that it was before. You will not get alpha indicators telling you what earnings occurred in a particular quarter, but what you will get will be more targeted information, which is a file that shows you all the people who have the earnings qualifying a VR agency potentially for a payment. So you would have a file that lists the 9 out of 12 months that list the people who have achieved 9 out of 12 months of SGA. And so we hope that that will be helpful to everyone. And we are expecting to get that to you as soon as possible, which would be perhaps in the late May, early June time frame. And so hopefully that's a good replacement service.
Thank you, Desiree. May or June, that's very encouraging. And I'm sure the VR agencies will be very appreciative as well as looking forward to that announcement coming through. Thank you. Adele, tell me a little bit about where can you find information about ticket assignment in the portal?
Well, starting at the main menu, if we can recall back to the presentation, once you choose an individual from your beneficiary listing, then you will go to the More Action screen to make changes. And this, in case you're moving to try to have them go from in use as VR to ticket, there's going to be a function that you switch it over in that section. And that's only available, of course, for VRs.
Right. And that is actually a welcome, which was available before, but we are glad to see it's also available in the ticket portal, especially around Partnership Plus.
Right.
Being able to do that on an individual case is very useful in certain situations, definitely moving that seamless process forward.
Oh, right, especially the more automated part to it, that's going to be beautiful.
So at that time, right now, in SBR files are submitted through the MOVEit system. Any idea as to when the ticket portal will start accepting those files?
Well, we're looking at the summer of 2015. So this summer coming up is when we're looking for all these
transactions?
The transition, that's what it is. Boy, this code is really getting to me.
The transition. And at that time, what happens with, or how long do we envision the IVR to be continuing?
The IVR where we're checking ticket assignability, that will no longer be available once we have the portal in place.
Thank you. Moving on to TPR questions. Do we have to request TPR information on each individual client? Can you walk me through what the new TPR process will be?
Certainly. Well, on the main screen, if you go to the tickets currently assigned to me screen, there is a column for TPR results. And if there is a pending TPR, you will see a notification that you have a TPR needing a response. There is no batch TPR file at this time, and as you respond to TPRs, you can check a box to remove the beneficiary from your list and keep visible only the ones in need of response to track the progress as you complete multiple TPRs in one session. So that should be helpful as well.
Definitely. All right. And as far as ticket assignments, will you still be able to get a batch upload? Do we have to look for ticket assignment individually? How is that process going to work as we move towards automation? Will it be easier?
Well, of course, the goal is to make all this easier for everyone. So, yes, I would say yes, it's going to be easier. But if you send in a batch upload to check assignability, you'll receive an instant response depending on the size of the file. Larger files, they may take a few more minutes. And at the moment, it's not available. So, therefore, that's why we weren't able to provide any screenshots of that, but it is something that is coming.
Okay. And actually, in the near future, all of the screenshots that we are being tested now, the process, will be available when we go live. A training manual will be available at some point. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes. What we did when we did the demo, the presentation, that was just to give a glimpse of what is to come. And once we are going to kick this off, there's going to be in-depth training, so please have no fear. That was not the training. That was just to give you a little peek of what's to come.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Desiree, I just have one follow-up question I'd like to ask you regarding now that there's not wage information available, do you foresee, the question is, foresee an impact on submitting timely cost reimbursement claims? Will there be a grace period?
Well, as I mentioned, the replacement service is not going to be that long coming. So we don't anticipate that this would be an issue because the last file that was received was in February. Based on the January file that we got, we made it available in February. We would normally have been making a file available around this time, I believe, and so there won't be any data that's missed. The data that that we will not have missed a file, to put it in other words. So we really don't think that this is going to be an issue. We would encourage agencies to, you know, use the other sources that they have available to them as well, but you will not miss a file, and hopefully this delay will not create a problem in this respect.
Thank you, Desiree. We do have one additional question that we've gotten off the chat line regarding the form, and I'm going to ask Adele to read the name of that form.
Okay, that form is a security awareness form, also the SSA 222 form. Desiree, I know I spoke and I mentioned that I know for the ENs that form is required, and to make sure I spoke correctly, do the VRs also need to complete that form?
We are checking with our information security folks concerning whether there is a similar requirement. That particular form is set up for contractors, but we may have a modified document that we would want VR agencies to sign at some point in the future.
All right. So the follow-up question to that, will that form, if it's not required, say, today, and a state VR agency has the suitability clearance, they have MySA account, and they're communicating with the VR contact person, will that form interfere with them getting access to the portal?
No. They are not contractors, and the same conditions do not apply, but we need to consult with our Office of – well, we are consulting with them on this particular situation, and we will let you know if there's another requirement.
Excellent.
But if there is, this is would be an annual acknowledgement of our security rules regarding our systems access.
Very good. Thank you, Desiree. We have one additional question for you from the chat line. And Anna?
Yes, the question is about the new SGA report that will be available to VR agencies. And they are asking if blind SGA will be included and if the report will also include open and closed cases.
The replacement CUBA will not have all of the distinctions that we have today, but we will make distinctions where necessary to ensure that the person qualifies. So the file, in other words, will include the necessary information that a blind agency would need. The people who are on that list will have met the blind SGA, and for the general agency, the people on that particular file would have met that requirement.
Oh, very good. All right. That concludes our overview of the major topic areas that we heard from you during our March call. Nate, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Adele and Michelle. I was trying while I was also listening to that. I don't do both things simultaneously too well anymore, but I was trying to read some of the questions on the chat line, and I saw one from Valerie in Tennessee who wants to know if you can file a CR claim on clients whose VR case is still open. The answer to that is yes, you can. It doesn't happen very often. Normally, you can't file a CR claim until you have 9 months of SGA, and obviously you don't keep most cases open once they've got that kind of work history. But once they have 9 months of SGA, you can file the claim with us. It doesn't matter what the status of the case is for our purposes. And I think I saw one other question earlier. It may have already gone off the screen about the new codes that I mentioned earlier in the call, and which would we rather have, the code or the description of the service. I hate to be tough-minded, but I guess I would say we'd really like to have both. If you can only have one, the code is the one that is the most critical, but both will speed the processing of the claims. And with that, I think we're ready to take questions over the phone. Operator, are there any questions on the line?
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, in order to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Again, that's star and the number 1 in order to register for a question or to make a comment. And your first question comes from the line of Jill Martin.
Hello, this is Jill from Nevada.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. I understand you're doing a lot of clearances, and that's great and wonderful, and thank you for that.
I guess there's a but coming here. Is that,
yes,
wait,
there
wait,
is, and
but.
I'm sorry. in this, just from the clearance report that I got for March, I had 24 claims cleared. However, 10 of them were denied, and of those 10, 7 of them were denied for SGA. Now, I submit, and I'm very diligent about it, very articulate. I submit them with the wage information, and I'm kind of questioning the integrity of the denial, I guess. Case in point was that there was 2 claims I submitted for one individual, and they cleared on in March. One of the claims got paid. The other claim did not. It got denied because it had 8 or less months of SGA. But I found that on the denial notice for the one and on the pay notice for the other, the period of CP was the same. So it makes me really concerned about the other claims. I don't get denied much on 8 or less months, 8 or less, whatever, that one. 8 or less months of SGA, I don't get denied much on that one.
Jill, obviously, when you have that many with the same issue, I would like to either discuss it with you or take a look at it to make sure that whoever the people were that were processing them, obviously, were following the right criteria. But let's do that outside of the call. If you want to, you know, either call me or fax me the account numbers, I'll be glad to take a look at a couple of them and see if there's anything missing.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. I will give you a call.
You got it.
Thank you, Nate.
Your next question comes from Gina Hoft.
Hi, Gina.
Hi, Nate. How are you?
Good. How's things in Wisconsin?
Warming up, so I'm happy about that.
I hear you.
I just want to thank you guys for everything, but then I do have some questions. First off, is it now standard practice to do a PVR on all cases over $100,000? Because it seems to be what I'm getting.
No, there hasn't been any change in that. PVR cases are picked by the system, and it's really not based upon the dollar amount. How many did you have picked?
Well, currently I have one. You guys are going to love me because I'm going to have to ship it in a box. It's a 9-page that you guys sent to me that you want justification on, and I am through 2 reams of paper, and I'm only through a page of justification for paperwork. And then the next one, I just got via email. I've been called on another one, and all of them are over $100,000. So I'm just curious if that is a new thing.
No, like I say, there hasn't been any change in that criteria. These weren't cases that were picked for that OIG audit, were they?
No. No, they were not. This has all been after.
Well, we've just, you know, there wasn't any change in the PVR criteria, but we do think that Wisconsin's a particularly suspicious state. So
I know we are. I know we are.
No, I'm just so you only had 2 of them recently, right?
I've had 3 now in the last month.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a look at it, but let me know if you have any more. That's a lot in a short period of time.
Well, tell me about it. I'm the only person that does it. So I am struggling to get that done, and then plus I have the transitional work one that you want, which brings me to the question, do you want a full PBR on those, or do you just want a justification on those?
No, justification is fine. Again, what we're trying to do is establish the connectivity between VR services and employment.
Okay.
Think of it as a CYA documentation.
Okay, and if they've had multiple cases, because, I mean, that can be linked, are we able to talk about the past cases? Because, you know, some of our consumers, all the cases sort of link together because they're sort of the revolving door consumers. So one case on its own may not look like that, you know, that service, yes, was important on getting the person to SGA, and if you removed it, they may not have got there, but also there's this greater picture. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think that is exactly the information we need you to lay out. We do not have vocational experts on the staff, and, you know, we are seeing a lot more instances where agencies are submitting, you know, 2, 3, 4 claims on the same person at the same time. And obviously some of them go way back. And when you have a VR period from 2006, 2007, and the SGA occurred in 2013, we need you to establish for us what those 2006-07 services had to do with the work that happened in 13. Because we can't always, you know, draw that conclusion. And I will tell you, on those kinds of cases, if we can't make the link, you know, the decision's going to err on the side of a denial. So I'm encouraging you all, you know, to give us the explanation and the documentation so that we can try to allow the claim. Does that help? I scare you off. Gina, you still there? I think we lost her. Operator, I guess we're ready for the next question.
One moment. Here's Gina again. Gina, your line is open.
Okay, yep, I'm still here. So.
Okay, I thought we lost you.
Nope, I'm still here, and that's all I had. So I'll see you in less than a week.
All right, see you next week.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Eric Schmidt.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing, Eric?
Hi, Nate. Good, thank you. Actually, I wanted to follow up with that topic for a second, and then I had another question. When we submit a claim, if we're submitting multiple ones like that, is the same examiner actually going to review, like, say there's 3 claims for somebody from a period of about 6 years, is that same person going to look at all 3 of those, or are those getting divvied up to different people? Because then I would want to make sure we submit that same information on all 3, or do we just submit it once in a cover letter for all the claims?
I'm going to answer that with a multi-part answer, Eric, so bear with me. Part one of that is, in recent history, yes, they're being worked by the same person. And part of that is because a while back, in an effort to really keep my pulse on kind of the my finger on the pulse of what was going on with the workload, I started doing all the incoming mail. So as I'm receiving the claims in, when I see multiples, I'm clipping them together so that they get worked by the same person. And, you know, I would encourage all of you out there, Eric, you do a great job of it. It always says, you know, number 1, number 2, number 3, et cetera. I'm encouraging everybody, when you have multiples on the same person being filed at the same time, if you can highlight that, you know, that makes it that much easier for me to make sure that they stay together and get processed by the same person at the same time. Also, in that vein, I would say it helps if you have a highlighter to highlight when you're filing recons, because as you know, even though we've reduced the pending and we've got the backlog down to under 4 months right now, I don't make recons go through the backlog again. If I see that it's a recon when it comes in, it goes ahead and goes to the front of the stack, and gets work right away. So highlight recons, and we'll get that for you. And the reason I said that was multi-part, Eric, since I'm moving into a different role, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep doing that. I will try to impart to Ms. Armstrong the merits of being involved at the front end or having somebody do that same type of triage, because I think it's helpful.
Okay, I appreciate it. can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. The other question I had was just about the whatever you guys are calling the replacement service. It sounds like it would be clear for agencies that are serving non-blind that you're going to send a list out, and it's going to have either above non-blind SGA, or for blind, it'll have above blind. What about agencies that are doing both? How are we going to know that person on that list is above blind if they need to be, or non-blind if they need to be? I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to read something like that.
They won't be on the list unless they have the awnings.
So it'll be on there, and if it's blind, then they'll have the blind SGA. And okay, that makes sense.
We'll have
okay.
Which type of agency they're under, and let that be part of the criteria for the file.
Okay, perfect. That's just what I wanted to clarify. That's all questions I had. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Eugenia Cox.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Just to address one of the things that you had said about when somebody asked if you can file a claim that's still open, that actually happens more than you think it happens, because people have jobs while they're going to school. And we're paying for school for people that may be in plan for several years, but they may be working at Burger King to just sustain their lifestyle.
Sure.
So on those particular cases, you know, we've always had an issue with that. If we're paying for schooling that's going to go 3 or 4 years, they're going to reach SGA midway through their plan. We're not going to recover all the money that we put into that plan. So, I mean, that was something that we were going to discuss in the future, but we really never have. But those are the cases where that would happen.
Yeah, so, and again, I hear you, and I understand the concern about it. It's not a concern of ours whether the case is closed or not. Mm-hmm. Our thing is the clock that starts ticking when you get to that ninth month of SGA.
Yeah.
The other thing that we have to take a hard look at is if you're claiming expenses for sending somebody to college, you know, to be a rocket scientist, and they're working at Wendy's and they somehow get to SGA level, is there any connectivity between the services and the employment? So,
well, and that takes me into the next part, the justification letters that you're asking for. You know, we get those periodically. We don't get them on all the cases that we submit that are past the one-year period.
Right.
And when we do get them, what we're a lot of the BR agencies, you have to understand, it's they may not just be providing training specifically targeted at one type of job. We provide general counseling and guidance. We provide soft skills, motivation, resume writing that could apply to any job. And I realize that you said that you need us to tell you that. And we have, you know, in the cases where we send in multiple claims and we've been serving them since 2002, you know, progressively we've added on to those skills through the whole process. So the letter that we write would be one general letter to say, hey, you know, we provided all these general types of skill building, like I said, not necessarily geared towards a specific job, type of job. So, and when you said, when we do a justification letter, it's just that. It's a justification letter. Now you're saying you need supporting documentation. Are you requiring invoices and things like that from us, like
no,
a PDR?
No, I did not say that we need supporting documentation. And the justification we're looking for is not really justification. It's an explanation of mm-hmm. the time gap, not the type of employment so much. You know, usually what you're going to be getting letters on is going to be when there's an extended gap between closure and SGA attainment, if there was not transitional work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, we get those periodically. We don't get them. I can't even remember the last time I've gotten one. I've submitted many.
Right, but I guarantee you, you will probably start seeing more of them since we've had training on this recently. And
yeah.
I know some VRs have gotten a few lately.
Yeah, I know I've gotten calls.
Right.
I've been getting calls about them.
You hear about it almost as quick as I do, Eugenia.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know how to write the letters of justification, but I just want to make sure that, you know, we're going to include all these things that could apply to any job. But
yeah.
We're going to explain exactly the types of services we provided. And if we did, like somebody else had said, if we'd worked with them 5 or 6 times, a lot of that stuff may be repeated. So, you know, it may not be tailored to that particular claim. It may be a justification letter to say these are the reasons why we should be claiming on 5 claims or whatever.
Okay. Now, just make sure that we can explain to anybody that would be looking at it
mm-hmm.
how those services you provided that we're going to pay you for help
mm-hmm.
the person get this job, you know, on down the road.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's, you know, a lot of the stuff we do is because people are starting off from scratch at some point, you know, and they need, you know, like, how do I show up for work on time? How do I get ready? And things like that. And then the other thing was, is going back to Nevada and Jill's questions, as far as our claims, I actually have a pile of claim denials and claim explanations that I need. And it just seems like lately it's been a little bit more as far as the claim accuracy, things that just don't make sense or denials that are incorrect. And I've been waiting for callbacks. I've been leaving emails for callbacks for help, to talk to somebody about this. And I haven't heard back from anybody. But I've got a stack of them.
Who have you been leaving these callbacks for?
I don't want to give names. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But I'll, I can let you know on email.
Well, I only ask that because we literally just this week have revamped our help desk operating both procedures and people. So I'm hoping that a lot of these problems will go away. But again, I would say, call me or Danielle.
Yeah, I have to either fax them or call somebody with them because you can't
correct.
Open any secure emails for me, unfortunately. And so, that's as far as that goes. You know, these are ones that you really have to talk out because they're just not making any sense. You know, and in those instances, I've got like 50% of those that are turned around or the denial is incorrect. And the denials really make a difference for us because it determines whether we're going to keep tracking that person or stop tracking that person.
All right. Well, I would encourage you to fax the list in, and then I'll get it to somebody that will, in fact, call you to go over them. All right?
Okay. And then the last thing was the security awareness. I don't know about everybody else's state, but our state, we are required to do 3 hours of security awareness training for both IT and interagency. And does that qualify?
I would say
every year.
I would hope so. Do you have some sort of authority that you can send me some documentation of that requirement?
Yeah, we have a thing saying that we completed it.
No, but I mean, is it by regulation? Is it by some sort of circular? What authority is it that's requiring you to do that security challenge? Because
our Secretary of State, I think.
Okay, I mean, if you could help us locate something official that we can share with our information security
people,
that would probably be great.
Yeah, where it's coming from, federally or whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's all I've got. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Your next question comes from Ann Zaffron.
Hi, Nate.
Hi, Annie.
Okay, you and I have already spoken at length about all the denials, so I think I'm being justified here. I see quite a few people on the chat line agreeing that their denials are the same, so at least it's good that it's not just me. But that's not really what I'm calling about. I'm calling about the RSA codes because we use JMARS Ticket Tracker, and I think quite a few of the other states are using that too. They pick up, at least in the way our database is, they are picking up the descriptions, not the codes. And there is no way on earth that I can go through 150 claims a month and recode all the claims and all the things in it. So the only option we're going to have is to have Jay put this new, I don't even know how he would do it, but that'll be behind the scenes, to try to get the codes on there instead of the descriptions. But how long do we have to do that? Because that could be 6 months before you can do that. I don't know.
We need the descriptions, obviously. The codes are going to be needed for sure when we go to the new automated system.
Yes, that'll be March of 2016 or April of 2016 where we would need that to be in place. But if you use the exact descriptions, the system will have the code and the description. But we also want to have an opportunity for you all to have some communication with our systems folks around these kinds of things. And probably the earlier the better. Some of us were talking about this just today. So we'll make a note of that.
Okay, and, you know, actually now that I'm thinking about it a little more, the way that our counselors code, and I don't know where these codes came from. I mean, I'm 20 years old, I have no clue. But they actually have certain codes that when we do code ourselves, which is when the claims are too old for the tracker and we run a PC SAS report, I have to physically translate every code. So even if he pulled up the codes that the counselors put in, they will not be your codes. I'm really concerned about this because...
Well, we got some codes from RSA, and that was probably in the fall. So those are the codes that we would be using.
What I'm saying is in our
database that our counselors use, they don't enter those codes. They enter descriptions, and there is some kind of code they put in, but it was some code that was, I don't even know where it came from. I truly don't. It came from, you know, La La Land 20 years ago. They code that in, and then somewhere along the line, again, people before I ever came in here, they translated. We have a cheat sheet that we say, well, okay, if it's code 2017, that equals an 11 in SSA speak. So then I will physically change the 4066 to 11 or whatever. So I don't know how we can possibly even get these codes, or for you guys to have those codes, or for them to be entered into a system where... You know, even if our counselor started today, we're talking about claims that are, you know, 10 years in the past that don't have those codes on them.
Okay, I don't want us to fixate on the codes because the codes just represent the service categories, and the service categories are in the Rehab Act and in our regulation, and we have descriptions that correspond to the codes. We need to be able, in an automated world, to identify the service without a lot of guesswork. We don't need, you know, we can't have the same service being described 80 different ways.
Right.
So that's all we're talking about. I don't think we're early enough in our automation plans that if the service code don't have we wanted to line up with what RSA is doing, and we thought that you were using them with RSA. But if you're not using them with RSA, then we would still need uniform descriptions. So you may still have to end up having J. Morrow tracker updated or whatever. But that's the kind of thing that we really would like to hear from you all about and talk to you about the things that we want to do in the system and see how that's going to affect you at this early stage.
Okay. And then just one clarification. These RSA codes, I mean, it's a term. Are you talking about the codes we use today, you know, like with 11 being diagnosis, assessment, and evaluation, and, 31 being corrective surgery? Are those the codes that you have in your guideline book, the SSA guideline book? Nate, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, but we have, like, 51 is assessment and 56 is diagnosis and treatment of impairment. Did those ring a bell for you? 61 is vocational rehabilitation, counseling, and guidance?
We have 61 as travel via common carrier. We never use it. I'm looking at the handbook. I'm looking at the SSA VR handbook and the codes in there.
No.
Service codes.
Well, we got a fresh list of codes to update our documentation and to use in the system. So this updated list is what RSA provided.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess here's my question then. When we talk to Jay, since now the codes that I'm talking about and that we've always used that are in your handbook aren't the ones you're talking about, how in the world is he going to know what codes? I don't know how this is going to happen. I'm just really concerned.
Okay, well, don't be too concerned. We're a year away from the system being here. But the point is we need to be able to have uniform categorizations of the types of services. And if that means just using the list that's in the Rehab Act and our reg, this is the list, basically. I mean, you still do the things that I just mentioned here. There's the counseling and guidance. Those terms work perfectly. Our system will have descriptions. We just need to make sure that we are using those descriptions. If it's a reader service, then we'll say it's a reader service, that kind of thing. And RSA gave us descriptions of what is under there. So if you put maintenance, we have a paragraph that describes what that means. And so that's the information that we all will need to have and that we all will need to use.
Okay, can you send me that new list?
We're going to send it out to everybody.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
I think what happened, we realized at some point that the list that's in the provider handbook had gotten it, I'm not going to call it outdated as much, out of sync with what RSA was using. So as Des mentioned, we're trying to bring some consistency to this. But as she also mentioned, we have about 8 to 10 months or so before stuff goes live. So we will have an opportunity to get all of this resolved with your input.
Terrific. Okay, that was my question.
All right.
Thank you so much. All right. Thanks. You too.
Your next question.
And we might be able to take one more.
Okay. Our next question is from Ellen Clapper.
Hi, Ellen.
Hello, Nate. How are you doing?
Good. How's things in Missouri?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Great.
I just wanted to chime in on this code issue. I'm the system administrator for our system, and as well as doing cost reimbursement and ticket to work. So I'm intimately familiar with the codes that you're referring to. And these are the codes that are in the policy directive with instructions on how to complete the 9/11. So these are the service categories that we are using in order to create our 9/11. So your system probably, at least our system does, I mean, it has to track the service categories of all these services. So I would assume that this should be a fairly easy transition, and I've been hoping that we'd go this way for a long time, so I'm very happy. And we're supposed to be implementing these new codes as soon as we can, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say is that you know, if you're using your system to create your 9/11, you know, the codes are already there. There just won't be a crosswalk to the old, you know, cost reimbursement codes anymore.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's about all of our time today. Before we disconnect, I did want to encourage everybody, if you're not aware of it, on Thursday we're having the first of our three seminars on youth transition that's going to be jointly hosted by SSA and RSA. I think it's a real chance to hear about this new initiative that we're trying to really get off the ground. Like I say, it's the first of three. We got two more planned for later on this year. You're going to get to hear from David Weaver, our associate commissioner, Janet Lebreck from RSA, and then a really good data-driven presentation from Todd Honeycutt, who's with Mathematica. And I think it's very interesting, and hopefully as many of you as possible will make that on Thursday. So thank you. We'll talk to you next month. I'll see some of you next week at CSAVR.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you would please disconnect all lines.